Hello and welcome to Backmarket Podcast, episode number 46. My name is Brayden.
And I'm Sean.
Yes, that is right. Today we have a special guest because Raj is living it up in Berlin, I think. Yes, welcome Raj. As a listener, first time not being at all involved in an episode, so hopefully we do him proud. Sean, introduce yourself as a Formula One fan. How long have you been enjoying Formula One? How have you rated this season in your experience of Formula One?
I've been following Formula One on and off since the 80s.
Right. Beats you, Raj.
Yeah. Well,
I think it does. Yeah.
Probably due to age, regardless. Early memories were kind of watching the likes of Prost and Senna and yes. Mansell, who was a personal favourite of mine. All the way through till today.
Yeah. And you are, I believe, at heart a Williams fan?
I was, yeah.
I was.
Yeah.
Becoming harder?
Yeah, it is becoming more difficult. So I have followed Australian drivers.
Right.
So you know, since Webber burst onto the scene.
And since now Ricciardo.
And yeah, so, yeah.
Fair enough. Well, with your years of experience in Formula One, which does actually outweigh mine by several in terms of Formula One fandom, I hope, we will talk about, you know, Canada has had some amazing races over the years. This one, look, spoiler alert, maybe not in the, you know, record books as the most exciting, but we will discuss it nonetheless, and we will get through the ins and outs of the Canadian Grand Prix and go through another week of Formula One news. I do have a few rumours and speculation we can get to in true backmarker fashion, but let's get straight into the race review to start. First of all, I'll be honest, I didn't watch that much practice, I watched qualifying a little bit on delay because timing for Canada is one of the worst for us Australian fans.
I didn't watch any.
Yeah, look, but you got up for the race. Yeah. I watched it delayed. See, I can't do the 4 a.m.s very often, so even though we had a public holiday, which is a bad excuse. Anyway, the only thing that really surprised me going into the race was Hamilton's rather lackluster performance, qualifying only fifth, considering I picked him to be on pole.
Well, I mean, traditionally, this is a track that suits him.
Exactly. That Mercedes engine, I was really expecting to just dominate down those straights. Yeah. Bottas pulled enough out of it, just being out-qualified by Vettel by a very small margin in qualifying. I think it was like 0.019 or something. It was very tight.
Wasn't very much.
No, not at all.
I mean, it's worth mentioning that Ferrari got their engine upgrade and Mercedes didn't.
That's true. Apparently, there was only like tweaks to the Mercedes engine to fit Canada, which Hamilton just said, look, that engine wasn't what cost me pole, though.
Yeah, fair enough.
Even though he didn't get that upgrade, he thinks, you know, his performance wasn't really up to scratch.
No.
The Honda performance looks pretty good throughout the race, more than qualifying. But
I'd heard people mention that, but looking at the speed traps and whatnot, I was struggling to see where that was. I mean,
yeah, they were up there in the speed traps, but not really, you know, around those corners and things. They were still losing the time, with the chassis. But let's just start from the beginning. We'll go through the DNFs to start with, because of course, Lance Stroll, home favorite, and Brendan Hartley not even making it around a full lap. Probably the highlight of the race in terms of excitement. I want to get an opinion. Whose fault do you think that was?
I think ultimately it was nobody's fault.
Down the middle, okay.
No, well, Stroll had... It looked to me like Stroll had picked up a puncher rear left.
Yeah, that's what he was saying.
In some early contact. And there was one shot that showed that pretty clearly, that you could see start to happen before he oversteered. I couldn't comment on his...
If he hadn't had a puncture, then he just lost that rear a little bit. But if it was the puncture, of course, look, no doubt, racing incident, shit happens. Yeah, he wasn't leaving Brendan Hartley enough room to make a move anyway.
Also, Hartley shouldn't have been there.
No, it was a bad spot for him to be in, and then Lance loses it a bit, whether it's a puncture or just, you know, bit of rear-end loss. I really liked the one thing I loved about that crash is the way that Hartley's nose sat on Stroll's tire and like drifted off into the side. It was all very, very peaceful towards the end of that. So
I like the way the carbon fiber bits of Hartley's wing just kind of slid into frame after they stopped.
Especially in super slow mo when you watch him hit the wall and then like good 10 seconds later they slide in, catching up. That was probably the highlight of probably the race, unfortunately, in terms of, you know, extreme excitement. A couple of guys went into the pits very early. I think Marcus Ericsson did, because he only did one stop, and it was on the first lap.
Right, was it?
Yeah, okay. His stop strategy was one lap and then 68 on super softs.
Because did Van Dorn stop then as well?
Van Dorn was... Yes, Van Dorn had an early stop, but it wasn't his only stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a couple of guys darting into the pits. But on the restart... You know, everything went to basically where the rest of the race was.
Yeah,
so
just kind of pranced away with it.
Exactly. He pranced away very, very early. Who else do we have?
Reminiscent of his days at Red Bull.
Yeah, 100%. Those early leads, getting out front.
Getting outside of DRS. And
Moving on, not much really to comment on Lance Stroll and Brendan Hartley, other than Hartley did have to go to hospital for a minor concussion test because apparently his helmet hit the halo.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, that's how he... Okay. That's what qualified him to be needing a medical check.
Right, okay.
He was all fine, cleared of any medical issues, but the actual reason the FIA provided was because his helmet made contact with it, constituted, concussion testing at the hospital.
Wow.
However they do that. I've got some news about Hartley. We'll get into that a bit later. Mm-hmm. But moving on, we have another DNF with Fernando Alonso on his 300th Grand Prix start after 40 laps with engine issues.
Yeah.
Do you know anything more about what McLaren have said? As far as I'm aware, it was just a MGUH issue.
There was something overheating.
Yeah. Okay.
I can't remember exactly what it was, but there was
notorious
some sort of
in
overheating
Canada.
Issue.
Yeah. 40 laps in, unfortunate for him, 300 races in.
They've got the same Renault that the Renaults and the
Red exactly.
Bulls have got.
I know Williams were saying they were worried about overheating, so for it to be happening to a Renault engine as well, it clearly shows, you know, that Canadian track can be difficult.
Yeah.
Especially on brake temperatures as well, so maybe all over the shop.
Yeah, they're heavy on brakes.
Mm. But I don't know, uneventful for Fernando. I don't think he was particularly excited this weekend. His mind's already on Le Mans.
Yeah, yeah, and he said as much in his post-race interview.
Yeah, he's apparently he didn't even want to take F1-related questions at the F1 race.
Well, yeah,
he was avoiding them.
Yeah, he just kind of said, well, yeah, that's my focus now. Mm. Yeah, fair enough.
It's so disappointing.
It's
so disappointing. 300 races in. I don't know too many drivers that can race 300 races and have it... I don't know, 300 races in, you've kind of already... you'd be surprised if you were still at a top team. But, you know, it sucks that he can't even finish the race for that important occasion.
Yeah, and he deserves to be in a better car.
Yeah.
As probably, you know, everybody knows.
Mm.
It's just unfortunate the way his career's played out.
Mm.
And it is what it is. Like, it's hard to see him really going anywhere else.
No, I've got some... We will discuss. I'm holding off. I know what you're... Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. Moving up to the guys that didn't score points. Sergei Sorokin, two laps down in the Williams. I didn't see him on my television a single time.
No, anonymous.
A non-event. He didn't get it caught up in any... Like, he didn't cause any problems as a backmarker, even though he got lapped twice. Almost the same could be said for Stoffel Van Dorn.
He did get in row... He got in the way of Hamilton when Raikkonen was leaving the pits, I think. But just normal traffic.
Yeah, right.
That was about the only time
I saw him. That was Sorokin getting involved there. A little bit anyway. And there's also Stoffel Van Dorn and Marcus Ericsson, both two laps down. Mm. I know Stoffel Van Dorn, you know, going for that early pit stop was a bit of a gamble, but... When all the guys above you go for, just a one-stop strategy, there's no chance for it to pay off.
You're banking on some sort of safety car at that point.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was almost unfortunate. Like, I think for the race, if Fernando Alonso's engine issue, because it did happen around lap 40, if that had to have caused a safety car, we could have had an amazingly exciting, final 27 laps or so, 28 laps.
Yeah.
But he was told, just nurse it back to the pits. I was so disappointed that he didn't just, have to pull over in the middle of a really dangerous straight so they'd call out a safety car.
Fernando's just like, no, I've had enough. I'm stopping here.
It was a part of me that was like, maybe we should just be pull over. Oh, you can't pull over, Maybe Fernando complains a lot about these boring and predictable races. He had a chance just there to do something about it. And then Marcus Ericsson, the only thing I wanted to say, was it you that brought attention to the fact that he has scored only one more point than his new teammate Leclerc in his whole career?
Yeah.
He came, 15th this race, and Leclerc scored 1 point, bringing him up to a total of 9.
Yeah, I think Ericsson has got 10 or 11 across his entire career.
Yeah, he's right up on his tail. I mean, do you think that's a fair comparison to be...
In terms of talent?
Yeah, I mean, is it as dramatic as it seems? You know, one guy's had 7 or 8 races and one guy's had since 2014 or so?
Well, I mean, the circumstances play a role, don't they?
But they do.
Like, Ericsson has been pretty regularly outperformed by his teammates over his career.
That's true. Even with Nasr, even by 1 point.
Yeah.
Like, it's enough.
So, you know, we all know why he's in that seat.
Yeah.
And Leclerc is clearly a talented driver.
I saw something interesting in regards to that comparison. Someone said, you know, like, it's a little tough considering he did drive for, like, you know, some of the worst teams even before Sauber. He's never really been put in a car that's, you know, meant to be in the points.
And
yes, he's done it a few times and his teammates have as well. But apparently up until Leclerc, him versus teammate stats, he's only about 10 points behind on all his teammates throughout the last 4 years combined.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, there's a deficit and Leclerc is showing it more than I think any of his driver teammates before.
Yeah.
But there were years, like I know 2014, him and his teammate never scored a point.
Yeah.
For
was
Caterham.
That when they were... Would has that been Manor? Or was that...
I think Caterham.
Caterham.
Oh, okay. Caterham. I can never pronounce that one. Yeah, I think Caterham, I think for the first year, him and his teammates both on 0.
Yeah, well.
So there have been occasions where...
I mean, there's those, you know, weird things that pop up where, you know, one of those... You know, tail cars wind up in the points. And the better drivers are the ones that tend to be there when
Exactly. So. Ericsson has capitalized a handful of times, but it is, you know, more luck rather than... You know, Leclerc seems to be ready to pounce around the 12th or 11th position and let, you know, and if something opens up for him, he's there.
Yeah.
While Ericsson is sort of like, oh, shit, I could have been there, you know, 4 or 5 places too far back.
Had I been good enough.
Anyway, that's more time than I need to spend on Ericsson. moving on to Perez, the only thing I want to talk about Perez that comes to my mind immediately is that little incident with Sainz.
Yeah.
I think it was just after the safety car restart.
Yes.
Perez going off around turn one, rejoining the track, losing about 3 or 4 places, and could have potentially caused a major incident, but was quite lucky in the way that he drifted back on track.
Yeah.
He was pissed.
Yeah, and I think he had every right to be upset about what Sainz had done.
Mm.
Apparently... Like, he was calling for him to be black flagged or something.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that over the radio. It goes, that needs to be a black flag.
Yeah,
why aren't they looking at it?
It's probably a little bit much. But, and I don't know if the stewards actually...
They've determined it to be a racing incident, which Perez has since commented again. I do not understand how he doesn't get some sort of penalty.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, I suppose I could... I wouldn't have argued either way, to be honest.
If you got a 5-second penalty or something, I think it would have been harsh, but maybe reasonable. It just depends on that telemetry they saw. Obviously, they didn't see anything untoward.
Yeah.
So, Perez way down in 14th by the end of the race.
Mm-hmm.
He actually technically didn't finish 14th. He dropped back a place due to the last race classification change. Okay. But we'll get to that as well. We have to mention it, even though it didn't have... play a major part, but for Perez it did. It played I think he dropped a place behind Magnussen, which he gained on the second last lap that voided or whatever. Anyway, and then we have the two Haases in 13th and 12th. Both of them actually saying, and Haas themselves saying, it was actually a rather positive weekend despite a lack of points.
I thought Grosjean's race was pretty good.
No more bad luck, you know, no major bad
no
luck.
More disasters.
Yeah. clever.
Yeah. So it's good strategy as well. So starting on the super softs and running for as long as he did.
Mm. Was Grosjean that had the
he had the Q1 problem.
Yeah, Q1 up in flame, smoke everywhere kind of issues. So hopefully this is a run of good luck for him because he has been unfortunate. Sometimes that is, you know, for his own fault. Sometimes not so much, but it's been a tough season for Grosjean.
Yeah,
and Magnussen for that matter. Both the Haas guys probably deserving to be a little bit better on the points as the season gets away from them. And then finally, the last of the non-point scorers, Pierre Gasly, the only finisher for Toro Rosso, who spoke extremely highly about that Honda engine.
Okay.
He's really positive. I know that he has a good relationship with Honda, driving for them in Super Formula, known as the Honda Whisperer. He's a promising talent for Red Bull. I think 11th place for him, he'll be pretty happy coming out of another outperformance of his teammate.
Yeah,
well, but not a hugely exciting race at the same time.
No, I mean, he drove his race.
Exactly. And then finally, Leclerc. We did just mention him, of course, in comparison to Ericsson.
Yep.
Leclerc, picking up another point, how many years until he's in a Ferrari? What do you think? I want a prediction. If Raikkonen goes,
I think... this gets into the arguments and discussions about Ricciardo and where Ricciardo's
all the other dominoes.
I feel like he's good enough to be there next year.
Yeah. He seems to have a very level head. He can drive with the best of them.
Yeah, the way he positions his car in defence, there's nothing... Yeah, you mentioned calmness. There's nothing rushed about it. Like, he just puts his car in the right place.
100%.
And you've seen in the last few races, he's defending against, arguably the best driver on the grid in Fernando Alonso.
Exactly. Up until that lap 40 incident, Leclerc and, it was a little earlier than the DNF from Alonso, but that was the main battle that kind of was raging in the mid-pack.
Yeah.
Or towards the end of the points. Fernando did struggle to get past him for quite some time, which was really cool to see.
Yeah.
Really, really cool to see. I think you're right about Leclerc being... Yeah, I think he'd be physically ready. I think he'd be mentally ready to go to Ferrari. I don't think Ferrari would be willing to take the risk, though.
Yeah, it boils down to what Ferrari want to do.
They're not that kind of team.
You know, do they want to pay Ricciardo, presumably what he's worth, and give him equal driver status with Vettel? That's unlikely.
No, you're right.
Do they want to cold Leclerc out for 3 or 4 years?
If they don't get Ricciardo, I would still be, a little surprised if they went straight for Leclerc. I would be almost less surprised if they went and put Kvyat in a seat for a year. And I know that sounds like a dumb decision, because I think Leclerc would outperform Kvyat, even on his best, even on his worst day.
Yeah. Well, they could do something. I don't know what Perez's contract is like at Force India.
That's true.
They could move him for a year or two.
There could be some reshuffling. I would love to see Perez in a good seat. I know Hülkenberg's wrapped up in a whole, Renault thing, but one of those kind of drivers who deserve a decent run in a top team. If Ferrari weren't going to give it to a young guy, give it to someone else who deserves just a little bit of a boost.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to the number ninth position, Esteban Ocon. I almost forgot he existed this weekend. What happened to him?
He drove a reasonably quiet race, I think. I don't remember seeing him a lot. But he definitely jumped a couple of places, didn't he?
He did. He started out fairly low on the grid, actually. Where's my qualifying starting grid? No, he started in eighth. He dropped a few places early and actually ended up in ninth. He actually dropped a place throughout the entire race. But he did actually lose it quite early and have to gain a bit back. So
right, fair enough.
Did what he needed to do to maintain the points. But my complaints with all of these drivers, it's not really their fault. They weren't in a race that they could really, do much else with. Hülkenberg moving on into seventh place.
Yep.
He was like a minute 43 down from the top six by the end of the race. Everything below the top six was a non-event almost.
The whole thing was more or less a non-event.
Even Daniel Ricciardo, I know he was quite close to Raikkonen towards the end a little bit, kind of gaining on him. Hamilton was kind of gaining on Ricciardo.
Yeah.
Raikkonen was a fair bit behind that, but apparently Verstappen and Bottas towards the end, they were closing up, but yeah, I never saw something happening.
What's worth mentioning amongst that stuff?
We can do... Well, let's
Ricciardo
do this
jumping those couple of places.
Ricciardo and Max, for that matter, both had a decent start. Ricciardo picking up an early spot over Raikkonen.
Yep.
Raikkonen got into he dropped a position on the first lap and stayed there the entire race.
Yeah.
The only thing that I really kind of found interesting was Ferrari, especially the commentators were mentioning, why don't Ferrari bring him in for a pit stop? It's a free pit stop.
Yeah, when he's in the window.
Try it out. Yeah. Let's see what happens. And apparently, according to Riva Bene, they said there's always risks with pit stops that, you know, if we don't have to do it, we shouldn't. They were speculating maybe, you know, speaking of the broken leg incident.
Yeah.
Exactly. How much was that weighing on their mind? I don't know. I just think it was a matter of, like, he's going to come sixth. We don't believe that a pit stop at this point is going to do it. Let's not bother wasting the tyres. I don't know.
Yeah, what would the delta be like at that point? Like, if he throws on some hypersofts, he's maybe making 1.5 seconds a lap?
Yeah. And he needed to do it quite a bit earlier. Like, yeah. then I think they probably, by the time they realised they should maybe consider it, it was already a little too late.
Yeah.
Lewis Hamilton, I thought there was maybe a chance that he gets, you know, close enough to Ricciardo, but he wasn't really getting there. I think the Raikkonen move, who was it? I'm trying to think. Towards the end of that race, there was a little bit of a closing of a gap, and all of a sudden around turn one, losing it, and like all that.
Oh, yeah, so that was Bottas.
Bottas on Vettel, a little bit towards the end.
Yeah, he was closing on Vettel. He was in traffic. I think he was... I can't remember who it was he was trying to overtake. Mm.
It looked like it was coming down second by second, and then, like, he was picking up almost 7/10 a lap.
Yeah.
And then got a little bit on the dirt, and yeah, it was all
done. Overcooked it into turn one.
So, it's just... I don't know. From learning about this, I mean, we saw a lot of talk about the simplified front wings.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was talking about that because apparently the rules are now 100% concretely, like, there's no way they're going back.
Mm-hmm.
They're just working out the details. Horner made a comment. He goes, I don't think that's the problem. You know, of course, he's going to say that as a Red Bull guy.
Yeah.
But he said the more important thing to look at is, like, a track like Canada will provide us passing. It'll provide us this because of track layout.
Yeah.
That was what he thought was the most important thing. At the end of the race, they went back to him and they said, why didn't you think this was the most exciting race? And he changed. He goes, well, it's because we're only doing one stops.
Yeah.
And we need 2 to 3 stop races.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, that's a very simple fix. Mandate a 2 stop race.
Or like a marginal 2 stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we already have a minimum 1 pit stop.
Yeah.
Why don't we... Does that go against the heart of F1 to start mandating a certain amount of pit stops per track? I don't personally... It doesn't bother me.
I mean, unless they find an artificial way to... Well, not an artificial way, like, you know, make the tyres softer again.
Well, that's up to Pirelli, and clearly they're not up to the task.
Yeah.
The thing that stood out to me, as I said, you know, Ericsson doing 67 laps or 66 laps or whatever. Yeah, 66 laps on
a set of super softs.
After the first... That's insane.
That's
you shouldn't
ridiculous.
Be able to do that.
Yeah, nah.
There's no... Like, your tyre should explode, not hit a wall. It should literally be undrivable.
Yeah.
By
well, yeah, it should
a
be
a certain
undrivable.
Amount.
Yeah.
Like... For these guys, I mean, I reckon Ericsson could potentially go out on those next week or the week after in the next race and probably do another 50 laps on them before anything happens. And that's a problem.
Yeah,
that's
a bigger
agree. Problem too.
Yeah, no, the tyre compounds are seem too hard.
Yeah, I don't need them to be unpredictable. I don't want it to be like, well, after 10 laps, there's a 50-50 chance they just explode. I don't want that. But they need to be like, all right, you hit the dirt a little too much there. You've got to go in for tyres in the next 2 laps because, you know, you need
that
punishment.
They always used to talk about the cliff.
Exactly. Where's the cliff?
Yeah,
it doesn't seem to be one.
I don't hear a cliff anymore. And when that happened, it was like night and day. All of a sudden, blokes are making up ridiculous amounts of time.
Not only a time difference, but you'd see them lose it a little bit on certain corners. And, like, there was an element of, I might not necessarily go off into the wall, but I'm going to miss the apex consistently. I'm going to have issues. You know, you need to have a balance between, yes, it needs to be safe for these guys to drive out on and consistent, but at the same time, they need to be consistently able to, say, 27 laps and onwards or 15 laps and whatever the tyre compound is.
They're going
to
be cactus.
You're going to need to come in within, I don't know, a five... I'm happy for a window, but they need to be able to do that because right now, everyone can afford to be conservative and just nothing happens.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You know, maybe that's a track thing too. I don't know.
Well, I was really expecting a lot from Canada. I know you were excited to talk about this week particularly because you're like, Canada should provide
a good
talking
point. It does provide, a decent amount of... Or it has in the past.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a disappointing one because I really felt Canada was going to be something really good. And I'm a little disappointed. But we can make up for that because there is a lot of, you know, after-the-race controversy surrounding the...
After the race?
Oh, the very end of the race. Yeah. What is her name again? The model involved.
Winnie Harlow?
Winnie Harlow. So
Winnie Harlow? Maybe that's she's changed it.
So, Canadian supermodel. Yes. She was given the honour of waving the checkered flag at the end of the race. I noticed there was not a huge amount of celebrities at the Canadian Grand Prix this year.
When I turned on my TV at
3:30, yeah.
I saw Martin Brundle interview Serge Ibaka, who plays for the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, yeah. Is he the one who got into Alonso's Formula One car?
Perhaps he did.
I saw footage of him, and he's like 6'10" or something, and he was not. There's like a footage of him sitting above the halo. He couldn't even get him past that.
Then he moved on to Winnie Harlow and apparently some soccer guy.
Yeah, Winnie Harlow apparently made a comment that was along the lines of like, yeah, I don't really know anything about F1 or 1F or whatever the fuck she was. She's like clearly not her element.
I might have been paying attention.
Yeah, I know in Monaco. Was it Monaco? No. Bahrain, when Christina Aguilera was there, Brundle made a comment like, oh, look at Christina pretending to know what she's doing.
Yeah.
There's that element of, you know, celebrities get these amazing experiences at Formula One for a bit of publicity. I don't mind that, but the people that hate it are going to use this example as a sticking point.
Correct.
Because, of course, she raised the checkered flag a lap too early, and that means, this is the weirdest part, it's a weird story. When there is a regulation for when this happens, you know, the thing that's never meant to happen, Formula One have put in the rule book, if this happens, because it'll probably fucking happen, we need to make sure that we classify it as two laps before is actually the finishing result, which in this case was not a major issue, because the only things that changed was Perez got marked back two spots or one spot. And Daniel Ricciardo lost his fastest lap honours.
His bonus.
Exactly. And he lost it to his teammate, which is even worse. So the other thing to note, of course, as you mentioned very briefly, Bottas was a little worried about fuel towards the end. He was having to lift quite a bit. He was a little worried about the car behind him. If that had happened, like if he'd lost that spot on the last lap and they, you know, marked it back for a classification, everyone would be up in arms.
Yeah,
you know, it would be a really big deal. I don't know how F1 would have gone about dealing with it.
Yeah.
And I do want to specify the F1 and FIA guys have already taken full responsibility. It was not her fault.
Yeah.
She wasn't told like, hey, wave the car when you see a red one, and she fucked it up and saw Raikkonen instead of Vettel or something. Yeah. But I don't understand. Like, it never fucks up when you don't have it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, they have everything they need there. Like they showed, like in you know, in the notebook that you know they've obviously got.
They got all the computer screens in the world to tell you what lap.
Presumably,
you're on.
They can see the pit boards as well from that vantage point.
He had a massive radio on his head. Apparently, the process is that he calls down and says, "Confirming last lap." They say, "Last lap confirmed."
Mm.
But there was something in that communication that he was asking, like, can you confirm when it's the last lap? And the guy at the other end was a bit confused with the wording and said, yes, I can confirm. And the guy goes, oh, cool, it must be last lap. Tapped her on the shoulder and got her to start waving it around. The only thing that bothered me actually more so was she wasn't very good at waving the flag. But
no, that was a terrible wave.
It was not a good, you know, final flag. But I don't know.
Almost as bad as Vettel's wave, actually. Did you see him with the Ferrari
with the Ferrari flag spinning it in a
circle? What was going on there?
I'm surprised the flag didn't get all wrapped up in a big ball. I don't think we're going to see a celebrity waving the flag for at least a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I think the F1 guys, you know, FIA Liberty, they'll just be like, all right, that was a little embarrassing. Sorry, I don't know, Wayne Rooney or whoever the fuck you get some week soon or, you know, in
Silver. Where are we off to?
Where are we going? France.
France next.
In a few weeks. I don't know. The Prime Minister or something.
Yeah.
He wants to...
Zinedine Zidane.
Yeah, exactly. There'll be some nice French celebrities there. Maybe just don't let them wave the flag until we get this process down 100%. But it doesn't bother me that much because it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, it's just another...
Look, it was a boring race. We've got to talk about something.
Yeah,
gotta,
I know. But, you know, it's just another example of Formula One being a victim of its own...
prestige and success, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
There doesn't need to be a celebrity up there waving a flag.
No. I think when people complain like, oh, look at Christina Aguilera getting a grid walk, that should be going to a fan. It's like, well, I get why they're doing that. You know, it's marketing 101 kind of thing. You know, some fan doesn't have 500,000 Instagram followers or whatever. No. And I'm sure Winnie Harlow, 500,000 Instagram followers or Twitter followers or whatever. I get that. But the, you know, the technical stuff that can get in the way of a race.
Yeah.
No. You know, when they throw the first pitch out in a baseball match, it doesn't count. It's not like that goes towards the team.
No.
You know, count to, of pitches. It doesn't work.
I actually didn't know that. I wonder if they, like, if they had like a ball built into the scorebook or something like that.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I just think, let them have as much fun as they want on the side of the track.
Yeah.
Just do not let them get involved in something that could, even in the lowest percentage chance of it occurring, have an effect on the race.
I agree.
Ridiculous.
100%.
Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about some news, because unless you have anything else to add about Canada, I'm just trying to think if there was anything left in my notes about race results information that was notable.
Nothing comes to mind.
I should just quickly give everyone an update. If you weren't aware, Vettel is now on the top of the championship leaderboard by 1 point. It is the first... So, this is the first time that Ferrari have won the Canadian Grand Prix since winning both the championship for drivers and constructors. So, if you're looking at past history, Canada is a very important race for Ferrari to take if they're going to go on to win the championship. So, good omens for Ferrari if you're...
Named after a pretty good Ferrari driver.
Exactly. They've had a great history in Canada, but it's been a while.
Yeah, and there was obviously a great deal of excitement around it. You could hear in Vettel's post-race stuff.
Yeah, exactly. He normally gets pretty excited, but that was a, pretty big moment for
him. There's some extra grazie in there.
It's funny. I was watching with my uncle, who's not a big F1 fan, and he was like, oh, he's not Italian, because as soon as he gets out of the car, he drops all that, Italian shtick and goes back to his German normal kind of accent. It is the 50th time in his career that he's won as well, actually, so pretty important. And the first driver to do that total since Alan Prost, Michael Schumacher, and Lewis Hamilton.
Yep.
And finally, Verstappen registered as the fastest lap. Of course, we've already spoken about that.
They mentioned the war.
The Dutchman also secured his first podium in Canada for the year. So, important for Max.
Yeah.
Notable thing, actually, I did see, apparently this is the first race this year that his family hasn't attended.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Horner made a quick comment. He said, his family's not here. And, I think it's been really good. He hasn't been distracted this weekend. Is that a subtle get the fuck away from us, Yoss? You're annoying.
Maybe. I did want to mention that he drove a good race.
Yeah.
He didn't get too aggressive with Bottas at the start.
He kept everything focused on his own race.
He had a good weekend.
Yeah.
He was consistently faster than his teammate during practice and qualifying.
Maybe it is more of a mental game than he's letting on, because I love the little thing that Horner said, instead of, his tradition is normally he goes out to dinner the night before with his dad, and they have a big chat about the race and everything.
Right.
This weekend, he went out with Helmut Marko. Would have been a very different conversation.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Maybe not a good conversation. Probably a very intense, stressful one. But at the same time, I think maybe some of those mental things worked for Max this weekend. He doesn't, they don't have to constantly be cutting over to his family, sitting in the pits looking pissed off, even when he's running fourth or something. A little less to worry about.
Yeah, we do see, as fans, a little bit too much of Joss, I think.
And according to some inside sources that I've... heard rumors about that in his days at Toro Rosso, there were a few occasions throughout the years that he was told, seriously, get out of the garage, you're making the team uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I think in the last few years with Red Bull, he's been a little more tolerable, but maybe for Max's, well-being, stay home a few weeks. Let's see if it actually makes a difference.
If it does anything.
I don't know. We'll see. And finally... Fernando Alonso, we probably should have seen it coming, because now it is officially more retirements at Montreal than any other circuit in his career. It was his 7th official retirement, or 8 if you include last year, which was technically he finished, but not really, kind of. 8th if you also include last year when he was classified, even though
he
didn't finish.
Right, he was classified, right, yeah, okay. Yeah. I remember him sitting in the crowd or something.
Yeah, he was chilling out towards the end of the race again. So, anyway... we will be going to the French Grand Prix in 2 weeks, so hopefully a slightly more exciting race. But at least the championship is kind of closing in. Daniel Ricciardo now dropping to 4th and Vettel dropping to rising to number 1.
Yep.
Let's get into some news now, though.
Okay.
Alrighty. I'm going to start off with more rumor stuff, and then we will go to the slightly more grounded in reality. Okay. First of all, there have been two crazy rumors surrounding Hartley this weekend, coming out in the last few days. I don't know which one is more crazy, so I'm just going to start with this one. Apparently, Toro Rosso have moved to sign Lando Norris on loan for the rest of the season. It has understood that they wanted Norris as early as next month's Austrian Grand Prix. However, McLaren have declined the proposal, saying they are not surprised that other teams are approaching their drivers, as they clearly believe they are as talented as we do. So clearly that was to replace Hartley, and give Norris a little bit of an earlier run, and I guess wait till the end of the year until they can reshuffle their Red Bull Driver Academy guys. And
what there is of them.
Yeah, I don't see that ever happening. But following it up, there was a rumour that Stroll was offered to Toro Rosso on loan by Williams to replace Hartley, and Williams would therefore promote Robert Kubica to their seat.
That's interesting.
That is a more exciting option.
Yeah.
I would love to see that happen. But I don't know if it's even more crazy than the first one.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see that one coming. That was kind of blindsided.
That one seems to be from an even further removed sort, like reality. That one's from Grand Prix 24/7, which I think I have reported other, you know, equally crazy stories over the last few episodes from that side of,
you know. Not a particularly credible source.
They're good with rumors. They come up with some good headlines. Whether or not it's true, I don't know. I think that one, I don't think either of them happening this year. I think Hartley's still there. I'm still sticking by it.
I don't see Hartley finishing the season.
Oh, interesting. So do you think either of these are the most likely option, or another third, you know, way it plays out?
I don't see who's going to replace him.
Okay.
He's
on the outer.
They're notoriously, like, impatient.
Very
with
true.
Drivers who aren't performing.
Mm.
And, you know, I'd like to see him stay.
Yeah.
He seems like a nice guy.
I like him. I like him a lot as well. I think he does have some talent there. And I think he's a really important guy to have around for developing that car.
Yeah.
You know, he seems to be really popular amongst the garage, as far as I can see.
Mm.
You know, and the way a lot of the Toro Rosso guys have, you know, made comments, oh, we really like having him around, you know.
I guess that plays a role, but
they disregard the whole, you know, rumours.
When Helmut comes in and says, this guy's not doing the job, I want him gone, he's gone.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
follow it up. Another great story from Grand Prix 24/7. Just seen this one now. Our offer to Force India has been accepted in all but principle. All but principle.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So they have apparently made a $133 million US dollar bid to take over Force India from the embattled tycoon Vijay Mallya. However, there is a follow-up from Force India saying they report that this imminent buyout is completely false.
Okay.
Grand Prix 24/7 seems to really just find the most outlandish possible headline and try and back it up. So, look, I don't know. Surely one of the things on their website could be correct, but I don't see the Sorokin thing happening. I would be more surprised to see Sorokin in any seat than Hartley disappearing. And I don't see Hartley disappearing.
Yeah, okay.
If you know what I mean. If they happened both at once.
Kubica.
What did I say?
Sorokin.
Sorokin, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, God, there's too many people.
Yeah. it excites me because I want to see Robert Kubica driving
too.
Somewhere.
But I want to, I'm being realistic.
Yeah. I mean, Stroll would probably fit in reasonably well in Toro Rosso.
Yeah. The only thing I could maybe see this coming out of is maybe Stroll's getting a bit frustrated with that car.
Stroll's getting very stroppy.
Yeah, he's struggling in that Williams car, but he still has a lot of daddy's money to put on a seat. You know, maybe he wants to, you know, have a bit of a crack at Honda, or maybe he's becoming difficult for Williams and they're happy to offload him. There could be a million different ways that rumor has come about.
Yeah, you're right. It's fairly outlandish.
But it is, pretty out there. God, it would be good, though. I reckon, look, if we had to lose Hartley to get Kubica in, I'd maybe be okay with that. There are many drivers I'd prefer to see gone to get a seat for Kubica, but God, it'd be good to see what he could do, especially if he could maybe get that, drag that Williams into a points finish once or twice.
Yeah, that'd be real interesting. Wasn't it he that, in practice, said it was embarrassing to drive?
When he did the, when he did a testing session or something.
Oh, right.
Okay. I think, but he has done a practice session and he's like not happy, but there was that comment he said, he goes, it is straight up embarrassing to drive this car. Nothing I can do.
Maybe he's not overly interested. He might be interested in that Toro Rosso drive.
That could be the best way that plays out, actually. If Toro Rosso are looking for a driver, I mean, he's been at Renault and Williams all within the last 12 months. What's a third team at this point? Keep him going. I got one more, one thing to actually raise the hopes of you, of the Williams fans. The Williams team took the victory of Montreal's annual Formula One raft race.
Yay.
They finally won something, and they won it reasonably convincingly. I didn't realize how much history this raft race had. Last year was the first year it came back since the early 2000s. It started in the 90s. Apparently, Williams actually wanted it at the beginning. They started it, or they suggested it amongst the teams.
Yeah.
Last year, McLaren won. This year, Williams won. It seems to be like the team that is having the most trouble on track put more effort into this.
Pouring
maybe
too many resources into these rafts.
Maybe. Over the
how much wind tunnel time is going into these?
That's where it all went, yeah. So in the 90s, it used to be a matter of they would build the rafts out of old bits of Formula One car and whatever was lying around the paddock and, you know, bits of packaging material from the, you know, stands or the caterers or something. Yeah. This year, it was a little more organized. Liberty Media are making it one of those F1 experience things.
Oh, right, okay.
So they gave every team, you know, a certain, like, box of basically junk. It was, you know, bits of old plywood and floaties and, you know, bits of anything that would float, they would give them. And then they added a team for Pirelli. They added a team for F1 fans. They added a team for Liberty Media and media guys in general. Funnily enough, they did not have a Ferrari team because they don't like having any fun.
No.
But all the other teams were there, as far as I can tell, rather competitive. It was 40 minutes or something, like the whole YouTube video. So if you want to watch it, it might be... I flicked through it, but it seemed actually kind of more exciting than parts of the race. So, worth a watch, and Williams do take it out. And I think it's really funny, like, the guys who come third are McLaren again.
Yep.
They're like, yeah, great, whatever, you know, who cares? Guys who come second were the Team F1, who are just, you know, guys that work for Formula One. And then when Williams came out, it seemed legitimately like a massive victory for them.
Oh, take what you can get, I guess.
they were looking like, you know, borderline tears. They were so happy to be up there on the top step of a podium, or anywhere near a podium for that matter. So, good news. Does that make you feel good as your as a Williams fan a little bit, or it doesn't
it does.
Damn. Okay.
You know, good on them. But
good on them. The best thing I saw was all the other drafts looked kind of shitty and the same, and Red Bull went for like this weird design on the side out of extra bits that they like maybe smuggled in. I'm not quite sure. And they're like, yeah, that's aerodynamically the best thing we could do. So it actually lines up with their design philosophies. And I think the fans like raft drowned. I don't think they made it. Oh, they didn't drown, but you know.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, they did not make it throughout the race. Anyway, moving on. Okay. This is my favorite story, just because it means that they're scared. Toto Wolff has said this weekend was a wake-up call after a totally shit result. Not mincing words whatsoever.
Nah.
Did you catch any of him in the pits during the race? Did you catch any of his reaction shots?
No, I didn't see any.
There was one or two that I saw, one being, I think, after qualifying, the result after qualifying, and then one... when Bottas went off a little bit and never was was never going to catch up to Vettel. He was livid, and so was I don't know if you can call
Nicky
livid. He was reactionless as normal.
He might have had a smirk.
Yeah, it was. Look, I don't know if they're actually worried. I know Hamilton isn't. He said it's like, you know, they'll fade. You know,
well, again, like this has been, you know, since the hybrid era.
Mm.
Mercedes, hunting ground.
Yeah, so, exactly. This would be the first race that they've genuinely worried about.
Yeah.
I think by this time last year, we were already seeing, you know, like there was that excitement, the Ferrari, you know, hype train had kind of left the station. But even by Canada last year, we were seeing, you know, a little bit of the...
Starting to flex.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I mean, to be fair, they did that at Barcelona.
Mm. But this year, I don't know.
Yeah, it looks genuinely close. I mean, and again, it was close last year, with the exception of some really weird things that happened for Ferrari.
Exactly. I think Ferrari are, you know, they're positioning themselves better than last year. By the time all that crazy shit happened last year, it was already a little difficult. And then they had two or three really bad results.
Yeah.
This year, not nowhere near as problematic for them. But
yeah, they look good. They've got a good package.
They do. I don't know if these comments, you know, he said things along the lines of, major wake-up call for every single member of our team. I'm the opposite of confident moving forward. Everyone needs to assess how to improve our performance. After this week, there will be consequences.
Well, it just sounds like he's, you know,
he's not having fun. No. It wasn't. Look, he still came second, and it's not like Hamilton didn't finish
maybe,
or something.
Did they go in the raft race? Maybe they didn't perform in the raft race.
They did. They did. They did participate. They were like, right in the midfield of the raft
race.
That's
what he's talking about, clearly.
Were these comments?
You know, it probably is a literal wake-up call, and he's just trying to, you know, let the team know that via the media.
Know anything about... I haven't seen... Like, of course, they didn't bring any engine upgrades this weekend. Are they expecting to soon still?
I think they're expecting that Paul Ricard.
Okay, so 2 weeks from now, we could all be eating our words.
They're talking about it being worth a tenth or something like that. I don't know.
I think for Mercedes, more than anything, they need to get their qualifying, like, dominance back. You know, the race will come this year, it seems, from qualifying. Yeah. If they're not the 1-2s they used to get, you know, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, well, I hope for all our sakes that is not the case.
No, I'm sick of saying it, but, you know.
But, yeah, definitely it seems like qualifying, there's a bit more of an onus on it.
Definitely. Let us move on to Red Bull stuff. Mm-hmm. So, Ricciardo is apparently being held back by the Renault engine upgrade this weekend. He said that the issues he was having over the weekend, not really being on par with his teammate for one, and not really being able to do much with that car. He said he really struggled to get to grips with that new power unit in his P4 position. We had the upgrade this weekend and my car struggled with more with drivability and the calibration of the engine. I could have been better, I'll just say that, but I was really struggling to keep those tyres under control with the drivability of this new engine.
Yep.
Something to do with the consistency. Max managed to drive it really well, so I think his setup was important, so we can take away, you know, we can take a lot from him, and I won't take away, you know, from his performance, but I certainly couldn't get that car to where I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
At least he's honest.
Yeah.
I think to him, Sorry,
if he's mentioning drivability, then I guess you could see how the rears would start to overheat a little bit.
He also has the same gearbox and MGUK and all the other stuff from Monaco. He's recycled it all.
Yep.
Maybe, they got rid of the issue, but maybe there is still some niggling problems with that car, which he'll eventually have to take a penalty on.
And like I said before, Verstappen had a good weekend.
Mm. I think I think Ricciardo performed the car where it should be.
Yeah.
I just think being outperformed for the first time this year is notable.
Well, it's going to happen. They're close.
Mm.
And if there was actually a small opportunity for Daniel to overcut Verstappen.
Mm.
Because the sectors that he put in on his
lap, that's what got him in front of Hamilton, right?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And from I heard a little bit after the race of him saying that the tyres were still okay. Mm. So theoretically,
I was expecting them actually. Yeah, we didn't really speak about that. That overcut.
It's your teammate. They're unlikely to keep you out. And
that's
overcut
true.
Your teammate.
I was thinking though that he was maybe going to stay out there for an extra lap or two to really pump in those tyres to make sure they had Hamilton. Yeah. But I would
take everything out of him.
Exactly. I would suspect Red Bull probably went, okay, we've got Hamilton and not Verstappen. Do it
get
now
Max as well.
Exactly.
So, you know, whilst Max had a great weekend and was clearly the better driver across the weekend, if things had played out a little
bit differently, if they weren't teammates, they probably would have tried to
reverse order.
That's true. I hadn't really considered the. I was kind of thinking, why didn't he go for a little longer? But obviously, Red Bull found that window that was perfect to take the enemy, but not the teammate,
not the enemy.
Anyway, and finally, again on the Red Bull kind of stuff. Red Bull is apparently at risk of losing the option for a Renault deal if they do not meet the deadline. Renault even suggesting that they could withdraw their latest offer before the deadline, which was set in late June, end of June. I don't see that happening, but it does mean Red Bull actually have to make a decision on time.
Yeah, some of the noises I've heard come out of Renault recently have started to sound a little bit desperate.
Right.
To be honest.
Desperate for a decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think a bit of all said, although you can't understand what he says.
He said it very quickly.
He meant there was a headline earlier in the week that was something along the lines of, if they stick with us, they'll be champions within 2 years.
Right.
And now we're hearing this out of them. You know, I think they're maybe starting to see Honda as a legitimate threat for that that engine deal. And presumably they get something out of having their engine in a Red Bull.
Yeah, I mean, they get the customer price or whatever, whatever Red Bull pay them, which I can't imagine is, break the bank different.
And additionally, they're probably getting data from Red Bull.
Very true, yeah.
Running at the front.
Renault need that. You know, they're being outperformed by their customer team tenfold. I don't really understand that relationship between the customers and the teams. I'm sure for a manufacturer, they get more out of their customer teams than the customer teams probably get out of the manufacturers a lot of the time.
I don't really
But maybe Red Bull are realizing that they are outperforming Renault
a lot. Red Bull now hold, I think this might have been mentioned in a previous podcast, but they hold the cards now.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And if you had have mentioned that to me a year ago, I would have laughed at you.
Somehow
it's worked out here where, Red Bull can kind of pick and choose.
Yeah. It'll be interesting if they do swap engines next year, or even if they don't, no matter how this deal goes, will they still be called a Tag Heuer engine?
It would be a Honda engine.
Honda will be called Red Bull Honda Racing.
Yeah. Tag Heuer would be there in some capacity, presumably.
They'd have a little sticker on the side of the car.
Yeah.
But would Renault want to be like, hey, okay, we're signing on for another 2 years. You got to start calling it a fucking Renault, please. Start calling it a Renault. I don't know anyone in their right mind that believes the guys that make those watches actually make a Formula One engine.
Ridiculous.
But the whole thing's ridiculous. Where that whole came from was like based on the bad relationship with Renault.
Yeah, they wanted to whinge about something. They can whinge about watches.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I think we're going to definitely see a decision after France.
In that window. So Horner was saying Austria.
Austria?
That would be the next race after.
The week after. Yeah, around Austria, we will see definitively. I still think they're going to take Renault, but if they take Honda, man, it's going to really shuffle up a lot of the cards
it's
on the table.
Yeah. And again, I don't know where Honda are at, but people seem to be saying that, their performance was reasonable.
The speed trap was promising.
Yeah.
I still go back to that image I saw of the Toro Rosso car with over the course of testing, it had 10 different versions of its rear end. And throughout the week of testing, it was getting closer and closer to what the Red Bull looked like. And then it went back anyway. And I think a lot of that was all about, hey, junior team, can you try this out? Because how would this work for us?
You to put on the car.
Pretty much. And I think that if they had Hartley for that whole race, even if he didn't perform amazingly, that data was really, really critical.
Yeah, that data could have been critical.
I'm sure Helmut's probably like, all right, Hartley, have a good race, but we really need this data. Bin it in the first lap. That's the kind of shit that pisses you off and has those vultures,
Yeah, it was a little bit unfair.
It's not totally his fault, but at the same time, shouldn't have been in that position. And those are the things that Helmut and all those guys are probably, tapping him on the shoulder for.
Yeah.
Anyway, final thing in the Red Bull deck of cards. Red Bull have come out and said Marc Marquez could actually be good enough for a Formula One drive.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you see he was testing in the RB14? No, what was it? RB something?
He's in a Red Bull.
He was in the Red Bull car from the 2014 Red Bull car. Is that the RB14? I get the names of the cars confused.
Last year was 13.
The RB11 maybe. Yeah. So he was in that. It was with a different special Toro Rosso livery because of the Honda relationship that Marc Marquez has.
Yeah.
But he put in some really, really promising times around the circuit. he started with a 1 minute 22, but got it all the way down to a 1 minute 14. It'd be really good if I knew what track that was on.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It means very little without me saying it. That is the worst article I've ever read. I'm so sorry to our, you know, I'm normally very, very organized, but I'll throw them under the bus. WTF1 don't even tell you what track the times were set on. That's pretty shocking. Yeah. It looks like it is maybe the Hungaro Ring.
Okay.
Oh, God, I cannot tell you. Looks like it could be the Hungaro Ring based on those corners. So I guess, does that time make sense? I think so. Pretty promising from him. Do you think there would be any chance of it actually happening, or is that just a nice little like PR stunt?
No, that's a PR stunt.
I knew the test was,
yeah.
But like, was there any chance in hell that they go, holy shit, he's actually quick? I don't know. He looked really good in the car, though. I will give him that.
It would boil down,
I don't know. Maybe
it's different disciplines, isn't it?
Like, it is. It is.
I can't see how it could possibly happen. But you know,
look, he's only 25 years old. He does have, you know, he does have the time technically.
He's done what he needs to do in.
Oh yeah, he's already considered a MotoGP legend. You know, it's not like there's too many things to tick off that list. If he were to do it, I could maybe see it as like, all right, Hartley's been dropped, and we need someone for four races in the end of the year.
Throw him in as a publicist.
Yeah, we know he's not going to finish in the points, you know, like, but neither is the empty chair, so, like, let's...
But that engine decision would need to be made well and truly before then.
100%. 100%.
Sure, why not?
He's not the only one, so...
If we've got Kubica getting in that seat, why not him as well?
Yeah, let's throw, like, just, you know what, put them all down and, like, pick a card, honestly. Yeah,
that's right.
He is not the only one to have driven. Danny Pedrosa also had a drive on the same test. His times were nowhere near as impressive. Okay. He was, like, didn't get it past the 120s, I think, or 118 or something. And then they've also got some links of also, you know, other MotoGP drivers such as Jorge Lorenzo.
Rossi jumped in a Ferrari once.
Exactly. Mick Doohan tested for Williams and crashed in his first lap in 1999. That's 1998. That's a good stat. But doesn't he drive at the Australian Grand Prix each year? I think he comes out and he drives the sports car in the comparison race every year. Yeah. So look,
his son's apparently fairly promising.
I think motorsports can run in your blood like that.
Yeah.
Look, it's
also
not impossible. That's true. It's not impossible that these Moto GP drivers could do it. They clearly have the balls to be a Formula One driver. Yep. Whether or not they have the speed and the, you know, experience is another question. But anyway, okay. I thought it was interesting.
Well, it's curious.
Thought it was interesting. Do I have any more stories? I do. Did you see the new helmet that the FIA is regulating from next year?
I did see the helmet.
Initial reactions.
It looked like a helmet.
It didn't look that different to you? I thought it looked really weird.
It did look like the visor was a little bit thinner.
Everyone is saying that it is like, oh my God, how do they see out of that thing?
Mm.
Apparently, the actual space you have around your eyes is exactly the same.
Yeah.
But the clearance above and below is slightly decreased. Yeah. So it gives the illusion that it's much, much worse to see out of.
Yeah.
On top of the halo, it's making them basically drive blindfolded. That's reactionary. People who say that, they're wrong. I did like the design of the helmet, the like raw carbon fiber version that they brought out.
I'd totally be behind a driver just wearing a carbon fiber.
Just that with your logos on it? It would be really cool. Kind of looks like RoboCop in the like carbon fiber design. But
like
as of next year...
The new RoboCop.
The new Ultra...
I haven't seen it.
It looks like the bits of carbon fiber that fly off the car, like the real raw awesome carbon fiber.
Yeah.
Good. It's apparently going to prevent further injuries like the one we saw with Massa.
Okay.
That's why the visor's ever so slightly changed in case a spring gets near it.
Okay.
It is also stronger. For instance, the new ones have to withstand a 10 kilogram weight being dropped from 5.1 meters and a 225 gram projectile being fired at 150 miles an hour from an air rifle. Without any signs of penetration or degradation of the helmet.
Uh-huh.
So, really quite... Jesus, that is... Yeah, that is... I just saw the video of them dropping a brick on it and it doesn't even move. It's pretty impressive. So, next year we will see slightly different designs.
Yeah.
The one thing I don't really like about it is some of the guys... I know Raikkonen seems to have like almost little winglets on the side, helmets and those things.
Yep.
I don't know if they're going to add those to these helmets because right now they look extremely circular.
Well, I don't. Are you allowed see how to add those? Still? Necessarily change its. Like, I mean, I can't see how it would change how safe it is.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know, for whatever reason, a driver prefers to have the winglets to keep his head stable or add some sort of aerodynamic advantage or something.
I hope they can still keep those little bits because it keeps them a little more interesting. This looks kind of just like a bike helmet on steroids, but...
The other thing that took me about it was that the... And this is probably as a result of the visor being that little bit thinner.
Yeah.
It looked like the part that came up from the neck almost looked too fat.
It was weird. It looks like it's funny. I mean, the carbon fiber makes it look very modern, but they've compared it to some, you know, photos of Formula One helmets throughout the years. It kind of even looks more old school because it's a smaller visor and things. Yep. It kind of, someone reminded me, it must look like those, the ones from the 80s or even earlier with the two eyeballs, like eyeballs
in the
middle.
Yeah, it does look, like, when they had like the...
Dual visor? I don't know how you describe that.
No, they used to have the balaclavas used to have the bit that went through the
eyes. Yeah.
And, it does look a little bit like that era of helmet.
Exactly. Yeah. But maybe that's just because it's pre all the, you know, fancy modern logos.
Maybe.
Anyway, we'll see that as of next year. If you don't see the picture, we will post that in the show notes. And finally, I have one more story. Which we alluded to before when we were talking about Alonso. Did you see what Zach Brown has said about Alonso in 2019?
I've not.
He has a very strong desire to continue driving Formula One. However, the Formula One schedule is extremely tough and he's been doing it a very long time. So I don't think he's quite made up his mind on what he wants to race next year, but I'm pretty sure it will be McLaren, whatever that is.
Okay. That's
That adds to those.
Telling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That adds to those stories that Backmarker is bringing you every single week about them possibly looking at the IndyCar series with an association with one of the teams there. And with WEC, I don't think they'll do both, but I can certainly see them being like, all right, Alonso, we've looked into both. Which one would you prefer? And then they go and invest and do something with that. Because, I mean, for the amount of money McLaren have, you know, backed him with, they'd want him in an orange car somewhere.
Yeah. That's pretty telling coming from Brown.
That's the most obvious quote I've seen.
I mean, if
so
they could
far.
Put a competitive Formula One car in front of him, I think all the problems about the schedule would probably disappear.
Yeah. He could still do WEC and F1 next year.
Yeah.
He couldn't do Indy. No way.
No.
There's too much crossover. Mm. In all honesty, I think that if they can't get anything together with a Formula One car, I think it would be more likely that he goes to Indy next year.
Yeah, maybe like an Indy car sabbatical or something crazy like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. He'll probably win Le Mans this week. It's not a very competitive field, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, Toyota have... lost some pretty unlosable races.
I know. It seems unlosable, but he should win Le Mans this week.
Yep.
I mean, it is the most unlucky guy on the Formula
One.
They run
that thing at 50% power or something.
just seriously push it. Just don't. You have to get this car to the end. I think he will tick that part off the double crown, the triple crown this weekend.
Yep.
Oh, is it this week? It is this weekend.
It would have to be this weekend.
All weekend for 24 fucking hours.
Yeah.
But we will probably see him win that, and then he'll go, all right, let's go do the Indy series, series.
Yeah.
So maybe I can win the championship, but I want to win in the Indy 500.
Yeah.
Which I think he can do, but he needs to do it in the next few years, where I think he could probably do WEC later in his...
Oh, definitely. Yeah, he could leave that... way later.
If he needs to tick off all three, the Le Mans could probably wait the longest.
Yeah, but probably. As you said, he's probably going to win that next week.
He'll probably tick it off. I hope so. Anyway, I normally would defer all my WEC stuff to Raj. I don't know, like, are you a
endurance racing fan?
Not a huge
interest in it. I will watch the big races like Le Mans.
I will watch Le Mans. I'll have it on in the background and I'll definitely like watch the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
But I don't have that much.
It's far less interesting for me. With there being one team in the...
It's kind of nice to have... If you're not doing anything this weekend, because there's no Formula One on, it's nice to have on in the background as just like ambient noise, because they're very relaxed commentators.
It is super relaxed. Good stuff.
What's he doing now? 149.
His car's been repaired for the last 20 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. He's still in the pits. Anyway, we've been at it for 4 hours, passing you on to the other team. It's just so relaxing. It's like really, really different pace to Formula One. And other motorsports for that matter. So if you need something to do this weekend, We've got Le Mans. Otherwise, we will be back as Backmarker Podcast next week to bring you the preview of Paul Ricard, yep, the French Grand Prix returning to the calendar. That'll be an exciting race preview. I will try and find some information about it because it is a new one to the grid, or returning to the grid. Otherwise, we are Backmarker Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Would
Thanks
you like to plug
me.
Like your Twitter or something? You know,
no, there's nothing to plug. Thanks
there's
for having me.
Nothing to plug. All right. I got to pay you in something. You know, for giving up your time, I really appreciate it.
No worries whatsoever.
Filling in for Raj, I would love to get you on again as a guest when Raj is back as well.
Yep,
or something along those lines. It'll be really good to have you. Thank you so much for joining us.
No worries.
Otherwise, backmarkerpodcast.com for all your Backmarker information and subscribing links. I will see you next week. Thank you.